Welcome to EWTN's Crucial Questions, Catholic Answers. I'm Father Regis Scanlon from Denver, Colorado, St. Francis of Assisi Friary from the Mid-America province of the Capuchin Franciscans, and I'm happy to be here. And it's good to be with you. We're going to consider a second question, crucial question. If you remember the last time, we talked about the real presence of Christ that the Catholic Church taught over the centuries, and how it taught that when the priest says the words of consecration, that what was there, out there, that thing changed materially, the material thing changed into Jesus Christ, that nature changed into Jesus Christ. It wasn't just a symbol or a sign. Now the question that we're asking today is the Church's teaching on the real presence accepted today? That's the question. Do we in fact accept this today, the theologians, the priests, the teachers? Well, we mentioned that this Church's teaching, taught by St. Thomas in the Council of Trent, came all the way up to today, and people have believed that. I can remember when myself in the 1950s, I was a young child, how we knelt there by the sacrament, adoring the Blessed Sacrament, made our first Holy Communions. It was beautiful, you know. And there seemed to be no challenge to the Church's teaching since the Council of Trent. It seemed that way, at least no serious challenge. But then something happened. Karl Rahner, a Jesuit, in 1966, he came out with a book. And in this book, he made this statement. He said, quote, "One can no longer maintain today that bread is a substance as St. Thomas and the fathers of the council obviously thought it was," unquote, unquote. What's he mean? Well, he says that we can no longer accept that the thought, or the meaning of substance. We can no longer accept this idea of substances as being the thing there. He says, rather, he says, the substance is the meaning of the thing. Now, I'm going to explain that. But first, you want to understand where you can find this, because a lot of times people say, how do you know Karl Rahner said that? Well, we're going to tell you where he said that, so you can look it up. And this is in his Theological Investigations. This is Volume 4. It's translated by Kevin Smythe by the Helican Press from Baltimore in 1966. Okay? And look on page 307. You'll find there that he says, we can no longer accept what St. Thomas and the Council defined as substance. Well, this is interesting. The Church's teaching, as it's come down to us, is called transubstantiation. And Rahner says we can't believe what St. Thomas and the Council of Trent, what they meant when they said substance. Well, the only other part of that word transubstantiation is trans, and that's a preposition, that means a cross, a change of substance. So obviously the content word in transubstantiation is substance, and if he doesn't accept what the Church said and St. Thomas said about substance, then he can't possibly accept transubstantiation. To say that he does is ridiculous. So what new understanding does Rahner give to this word substance, he says? We can't say that substance or bread is as we thought it was. You know, the thing out there, the form and the matter, the material thing. He says the Church looked at substance as though it was for the form and the matter, especially the matter, the material thing. He says we can't accept that anymore. Well, what new idea does he have? What does he say substance is today? Well, if you look at his encyclopedia, his theological encyclopedia, the Concise Sacramentum Mundi, you'll find an article written there by Engelbert Gutwinger. Okay, it's called Transubstantiation. Now, Rahner edited this book, and he is the general editor, and therefore he is responsible. And so we have to assume that he agrees with what's in there. And if we look in there, we'll see what they state about the consecration, that Engelbert Gutwinger stated. And he states this, quote, "The more recent approaches," he's talking about the Eucharist, "suggest the following considerations. One has to remember that the words of institution indicate a change, but that they do not give any guiding line for the interpretation of the actual process. As regards transubstantiation, it may be said that the substance, essence, meaning, and purpose of the bread are identical, but the meaning of a thing can be changed without detriment to the matter. Okay, and that's on page 1754 of Karl Rahner's The Concise Sacramento Mundi. Okay, that's published by Seabury Press out of New York, 1975. Again, it's on page 1754. Now, what's Rahner saying? What's Engelbert saying? What are they all saying in this idea, these theologians, when they get into this kind of thinking like Rahner has? Well, here's what they're saying. They're claiming that when the substance of the thing is really the meaning and purpose of the thing. Okay? They are saying that the meaning and purpose of the bread and wine in front of the priest, when the priest says the words of consecration, says the meaning and purpose of the bread and wine change, but the material thing doesn't change. Yeah, the physical bread remains as it is. This is what they're saying. Let me quote another thing what they say. And this is from the same source. It says, quote, "The meaning of the bread has been changed through the consecration. Something which served profane use now becomes the dwelling place and the symbol of Christ, who is present and gives himself to his own. This means that an ontological change has taken place in the bread." Okay, that's also on page 1754. So what Rahner and company are saying is that when the priest says the words of consecration, okay, this is my body and this is my blood, which the physical thing, the material thing doesn't change, he says. What does change, it has a different meaning for us, a different purpose for us, you see. And he says, and that's what we mean by the being of something. The being of something is its meaning and purpose. Okay? So, well, that's great. But the problem is, I mean, just use common sense. If someone came up to us and was very hungry and wanted some food, and you said, well, just think of the idea of a piece of bread. There, now you've got the meaning and the purpose. You've got the meaning of it, the idea. Doesn't that taste good? He would probably, he might knife you. He'd be really upset. It seems absurd. But this is an example where sometimes theological ideas can start going so spinning out in such a way that when you take them down and get on the ground and look at them and put it in practical life, they become ridiculous. So for Rahner, the consecration changes the meaning and purpose of the bread and wine, but not its form and matter or its physical being. Strictly speaking, for Rahner, it's the use of the bread and wine and the mind of the celebrant and of the community which changes, not the bread and wine, because it's the purpose and meaning that changes, and that occurs in the people that are looking at the bread and the wine. So according to this view, one can speak of Christ as being in the bread and wine. You can say that Christ is present in the bread and wine, but only as a symbol, only as a symbol. Okay? We have to remember that. Now, the other person that came along that really popularized what I would call a rejection on the church's teachings on the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist, the person who I think really popularized a theory of the Eucharist which was very different from the Catholic Church's teachings, even though they were or are a Catholic priest, is Father Edward Skillebeck. And he called his theory transignification. Rahner called his theory transfinalization. Father Edward Skillebeck, we have to listen very carefully to what he says. He tells you an awful lot about what they're thinking when you do. He begins by saying this. He says, "The Eucharist begins with the presentia realis." Now, that's Latin, but you know what that means. Presentia realis, real presence. So, Father Edward Skillebeck, a Dominican, he says that the Eucharist begins with the real presence, and its aim is to make this presence more intimate. So, Father Skillebeck, he sees the real presence occurring at the beginning of a Mass, and that the object is to make this presence more intimate as the liturgy goes on. He continues. Listen to what else he says. He says, "The signs of the Eucharistic bread only imply a presence as an offer emanating from the Lord in his assembled community. The real presence that is peculiar to the Eucharist is thus confined to the category of personal presence. It is interpersonal, The host mediates between me, between the Lord and His church, and me and the same church. That's very interesting. Father Skillebeck, he sees that the bread and wine represent a gift that the community is giving to me, and that I am giving to the community, and we're giving to one another. It represents a gift. And because of that, our personal presence to one another becomes the real presence. He continues. He says, I kneel not before a Christ who is, as it were, condensed in the host, but before the Lord Himself, who is offering His reality, His body to me through the host. So you see there, he says, he doesn't kneel before the host. He doesn't adore the host. He adores this Christ who the host represents. So you can see right here, he makes a big distinction between a real Christ and the host. Pretty hard for him, and reading that, it's pretty hard to believe that he believes that that host is really Jesus Christ, the nature of Christ. He goes on, makes it more clear. He says this. He says, what takes place in the Eucharist is a change of sign. Transubstantiation is a transfinalization or a transignification, but at a depth which only Christ reaches in His most real gift of Himself. Bread and wine become together with the words of consecration, the signs which realize this most deep gift of Christ Himself. So, what Father Skillebeck is saying is that he's trying to say that what the church means by transubstantiation is really transfinalization or transignification. Those are big words, but they mean change of sign, change of meaning, change of purpose. But the real important point is to understand is that he doesn't adore the host. He doesn't kneel before the host. Okay? Now, according to, by the way, this is found in the Eucharist, New York, Sheet and Ward, 1968, page 120. Edward Skillebeck's The Eucharist, page 120. Remember that. It's very, very important to understand what he says when he says that the Mass begins with a real presence. He's talking about the presence which is in the people, not the bread and wine. He's talking about the presence that's in the people. That's what he means by the real presence. Now, this has been seen in the United States, too. We must realize this, that the United States also has theologians who have a difficult time accepting the traditional understanding and the traditional teaching of Christ in the Eucharist. And this has affected the seminaries very much. And we have to understand this very clearly, and we have to give some examples, okay? And so one of the examples I want to give is a man, a Jesuit, by the name of Tad Guzie, okay, G-U-Z-I-E, and he's from Marquette University. Now, he makes this statement, and which this is, all of the statements actually by the American theologians are really a popularization of Karl Rahner and Edward Skillebeck. Father Tad Guzie says this. He talks about the change that takes place after the priest says the words of consecration. He says, quote, the change in the bread and wine can be understood as a change at the second level of looking at reality. I believe he means by that symbol. He continues, as a very real change, but not one that has to do with the physical order. In recent years, theologians have brought into play concepts like transignification, which strive to emphasize that the change is not a physical one. I have heard teachers say that the contemporary theology is simply attempting to translate transubstantiation and make it meaningful to our age, unquote. And by the way, you can find this in Jesus and the Eucharist by Tad Guzie, Paulus Press, New York, 1974, pages 67 to 68. Now, Father Guzie is saying that, yes, he says, there's a change that takes place, but it's a change in the meaning, the symbol. In other words, the bread and wine before were a symbol of physical food, but now they are a symbol of spiritual food. But there's no change in the physical thing there. The bread is still physical bread. So Monica Hellwig, now it's important to understand what Monica Hellwig says. And Monica Hellwig, by the way, she's a theology professor at Georgetown University, and she was recently named the director of the Association of Catholic Colleges and Universities, which is the higher education unit of the National Catholic Education Association. She assumed this position, I believe, on July 1st, 1996. So she mediates, you know, in dialogues between the American bishops and the universities, Catholic universities, and she's kind of the go-between. And she dedicated her earlier book, Jesus, the Compassion of God, to Piet Schoenenberg, Dutch theologian, Dominican, who was the inspiration for Father Skillebeck's. And now she has written a book called Understanding Catholicism. And in this book, Monica Helwig explains what she sees as the Catholic Church's teaching on the Eucharist. And she describes what happened when Jesus took bread and broke it. She explains what this really meant. Okay, and I'm going to read the quote from her book. It says, quote, she says, "In breaking it and giving it to them, he says," talking about Jesus, "take and eat, for this is my body." It has generally been assumed that this was intended to mean, "This bread is my body," and that the task of interpretation was concerned with what is meant by equating the two. Scholars have, however, suggested that it more properly was intended to mean that this action of blessing, breaking, sharing, and eating in such an assembly in his name and memory was to be seen as the embodiment of the presence and spirit and power of Jesus in the community," unquote. You'll find that in Monica Helwig, Understanding Catholicism, put out by Paulus Press, New York, 1981, page 139. You know, what Monica Helwig is saying, she's saying that we used to think that when Jesus took bread and blessed it, that we were trying to bring together what his words, "This is my body, this is my blood," with the bread and wine. Well, she says, well, that's not really what we were doing and what Jesus did, he says. What we are doing and what Jesus did was, we were saying, "This is my body," meaning the community was the body, not the bread and wine. Okay, so it's good to take a look at that. We need to understand what these liaisons are teaching and what they believe about the Eucharist, okay? These liaisons between the American bishops and the Catholic University. But to give you another example, and this is a very important one, because this is a catechism. It's a catechism which sold over 2 million copies. And it's making the same point as Tad Guzzi and Monica Helwig and Karl Rahner and Edward Skillebeck's. But it's sold over 2 million copies. So it's going to have a tremendous effect. It has already had a tremendous effect upon the people. Let me read to you what it says about the Eucharist. This is a book by Anthony Wilhelm called Christ Among Us. Okay? And I'm taking this from the fifth revised edition, HarperCollins Publishing Company, San Francisco, 1990, page 216. And in this he says, quote, "When we say that the bread and wine become Christ, we are not saying that the bread and wine are Christ. We are not practicing some form of cannibalism when we take this in communion. What we mean is that the bread and wine are a sign of Christ present here and now in a special way, not in a mere physical way, as if condensed into a wafer. Somehow his presence has taken over the bread and wine so that, for us who believe, it is no longer merely bread that is present, but Christ himself," unquote. Like I said, that's page 216 of Christ Among Us, fifth edition, fifth revised edition, 1990. Now, he clearly states here that when we say that bread and wine become Christ, we are not saying that bread and wine are Christ. And he says it's not a physical change. Now, you can see how that ties right in with Father Rahner, Skillebeck's, Father Guzzi, Monica Helwig, all being the same thing. What you're saying is this: that the presence that they're talking about, when they say real presence, they're talking about the presence in the people. We call it the mystical body of Christ. And that the bread and wine are a symbol of that. Monica Helwig says that this is what Jesus meant. He didn't mean that bread and wine was his body, but that the community was his body. The bread and wine was a symbol of this. And this is what he's saying, Anthony Wilhelm's saying. Anthony Wilhelm is the next priest. And this book has sold over 2 million copies. I was giving a talk one time. It was about 300 people at this talk, and they were priests, nuns, lay people, and good Catholic ones too, I saw habits everywhere. I saw colors. And I asked them, how many of you folks have heard of Mysterium Fidei, Paul the Sixth teaching? That's encyclical. Two or three hands went up out of 300. And I asked, how many of you have heard of Christ Among Us? 90% of them raised their hand. Well, there is definitely some confusion over the Eucharist, and I think we can see why when you get results from like that. But this presents us with some uncomfortable facts, doesn't it? Yes, and I think we better realize this. First of all, we've got to look at what's happened. This so-called new theology of the real presence that they're talking about, you know, that Christ is present in Eucharist as a symbol of sign, they call it a new theology, but it's the same thing that Berengaria has taught in the 11th century. This is not new theology. This is old heresy, I guess. At least it seems that way to me. Huh? Old teaching, which Berengarius was told he had to reject. Now, we know that Christ is present in the Eucharist, even if the priest is a sinner, and he says the word is consecration. We know that bread and wine has changed the body and blood of Christ, even if he's a sinner. Thomas Aquinas says that even if he doesn't believe, and he says, this is my body and this is my blood, and he intends to change that bread and wine to body and blood of Christ, then that is the body and blood of Christ. But the question is, would a priest who doesn't believe intend to change the bread and wine to the body and blood of Christ? And that's the problem. For a lot of people, it bothers them. If they see their priest that does not believe, then they hesitate. They wonder if that's really Christ, that bread and wine has been changed. And it's a sad thing. The church has taught and teaches in the Catholic Catechism, the number 1128, that if the sacrament is celebrated in accordance with the intention of the church, then that is the body and blood of Christ. Then the sacraments take effect. So the people, we really have to trust that God will help us. We should always assume that that's the body and blood of Christ and never don't. But it's good to go and talk to the priest and ask him, you know, ask the priest and say, Father, do you believe that this is the body and blood of Christ or not? Do you believe that this is Jesus? Or do you think that there's real physical bread after you say the word of consecration? That's the key question. If you say, is there physical bread there after the consecration? If he says yes, then Father does not believe in what the church teaches. He's believing along with Rahner and Skillebex. And of course, the unhappy part of this aspect is that the Rahner and Skillebex are the most popular ones taught in theology today in the seminaries. And there's where our grave difficulty comes. And that's why there's so much confusion in the church today. So we have a lot to do to correct these things. And Catholics need to teach now. We all need to look at these quotations. We need to know where we get them, especially the teachings of the church. And we need to make our teachings known, especially in Mysterium Fidei. We need to read that and teach this to other people, and let them see what the other theologians say, and show them where they're wrong, where they're incorrect. And if you want to do a little more reading on this, I would recommend again, and still is Christ really among us? And this is a homiletic and pastoral review, okay? And this is the October 1995 issue, and you can write to the Ignatius Press, they are now publishing it, and ask for a copy and they will send you a copy. But this brings us to the conclusion of our second question then. The first question was, did the church really teach all these years and centuries that Christ is really present in the Blessed Sacrament? The answer was yes. And now we ask, does everybody in the church accept this? And the answer, unfortunately, is no. There are many who do. But they don't get the publicity, they don't get the press that the ones who are all popular do. And the ones that are popular seem to be challenging. That's a good word. I don't want to call anybody heretic, but I call this a challenge, challenging the church's teaching on the real presence. And so what do we do as Catholics when this happens? Do we sit on the sidelines and just watch? That doesn't seem right, does it? Not if we're Catholics. What we need to do is to learn our doctrine of our Catholic faith on the real presence of the Eucharist. Read our catechism. We can read our catechism. We can go do a little more than that, too. We can read the Mysterium Fidei, the encyclicals on the Eucharist. We can look up what the Council of Trent said on the Eucharist. We can do so many things. And we can teach so that our teaching is very clear. And when you put the truth out among error, the truth will always win out in honest hearts. We don't need to condemn anyone. All we need to do is make the truth very clear. And we do that by having it resound in the hearts of all the laities, like all the laity who are watching EWTN. So I believe that I have shown you, at least some of the sources by which you can come to a knowledge of the Church's teaching on the Real Presence. The next question that we'll have to ask is take a good look at what does Mysterium Fidei teach? How clear is the Church's teachings? And it is very clear when we get to see that document. So that's what we're going to do the next time. And so I would like to thank you for listening tonight and ask you to return when I'm speaking again. Thank you.